Sunday Skate on Sports Radio WEEI.
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and the NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey.
Like it is sure. Yeah.
With Ken Laird from the Kirk and Callahan Show.
What a bunch of criminals. We ought to be in jail. That's all there is to it.
And WEEI.com Bruins writer Ty Anderson.
The sticks are hot. Sticks are alive. They're scoring goals.
Sunday Skate is brought to you by Star Market.
Need this win, you know. We got a lot of losses.
Yeah, we got a lot of losses.
Lace them up for some Bees talk right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
Well, it was a question that required very little in response. Really, it called for a one-word answer. My in-depth question to Ty Anderson last night via text, as we were talking about the show coming up this morning. You and I were both there at TD Garden last night for the fun. 2-1 overtime went over the Habs. I said to Ty, what's the biggest reason? Why is this happening? Why are the Bruins having an unexpected season? Not a one-word response. I get a 17-word text. You are Mr. Nuance. You're like Drellick. You go deep dive here into why the Bruins are having this kind of a season. Here's the Ty Anderson response. You have four lines that play four uniquely different styles, and it's hard for teams to match. I was just hoping for a Bergeron or a Cassidy or a Marchand. You got to go real in-depth.
It's not that simple. That's why. I mean, in years past, we'd say, okay, well, it's the first line. They're the best line in hockey, and we go forward. But you look at this team, this lineup, no matter the 12 skaters they put out there, it is pretty remarkable that this team is just, they score in a variety of ways. They can play different styles, like I said. I mean, you know, you have two lines that predominantly bang around in your Nash line with Backes and Heinen, and your fourth line with Achari, Schaller, and Corrali.
So your answer is the whole team.
The whole team.
You can't
pinpoint
yes,
one guy.
Yes, you can. You have to.
Who?
You have to pick one, and he got hurt last night. How long was it into the game?
37 seconds.
37 seconds into the game. The answer is a simple Charlie McAvoy. That's why this team is having the unexpected season they're having. So we're going to get into, I mean, last night was an incredible resolve performance?
Yeah, because
by the Bruins last night?
You throw 43 shots on net, you attempt 80, none go in. You should kind of pack it in at that point, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it was like you could sort of see the dam getting ready to break. Eventually, I felt like they were going to break through last night. It was a matter of time against a pretty bad Montreal team. Obviously, one where Claude Julien is now resorting to just whining about officiating after that.
Remember that? So, remember those days?
I do remember that. But no, I go back to just in terms of what's different from last year, dramatically different. And if you had to pinpoint one guy, I know what you're saying. They definitely have a different dynamic from top to bottom. You could easily say there are a million different contributions and reasons why. But the biggest difference to me from last year to this year is McAvoy and the trickle-down effect and what they're like without him. I mean, Carlo, I guess they were more of the Claude Julien-type team last night with Carlo and Chara, the defensive group, and, you know, five defensemen, you're going to play a little bit differently. I just don't – they cannot afford to lose Charlie McAvoy for a long stretch of time. And if he's gone for the playoffs, I think they're in real trouble.
Yeah, no, that idea is a little scary. I'm not going to sit here and say they're a third-round team without McAvoy. But I do think that, you know, they got all these guys for this exact reason. You know, talking to people within that team, they knew that this schedule, this March schedule, was rough to begin with. You factor in injuries, you factor in the depth. I think that they think they can survive this for a few weeks. But no, if he's done for the year, which is terrifying to me because it was a largely non-contact
injury. Yeah,
what
happened? I thought for sure it was Gallagher. Dirty play by Gallagher on the first look at the review.
He just gets tripped up there and something's wrong. And you think, you know, I saw him go down. And I go, oh, that didn't look good. And then he gets up and he skates. He skates fine. But then he gets to the bench and he looks like he's about to collapse on the bench on the way down the tunnel as well. So something went wrong there. And you know, it's always scary when you're talking about non-contact injuries and what have you. At the same time, you're not going to find anything out today. They're day off for them. They're at practice again tomorrow. So kind of a nervous 24 hours if you're a Bruins fan.
I mean, rampant speculation would be a knee or something, right?
You'd think knee or a ligament groin or something like that. I mean, it was weird to see the way that he kind of buckled going down. It could be any number of things, honestly, but I do think that when you look at this, right now they can survive it. They have this point cushion here. You don't have to rush him back. You can take another 2 weeks off if anything's swollen or pulled. You know, take your time, kind of similar to the whole Bergeron thing. They have the depth to survive right now. But no, you're right that they need this player come playoff time because he is the key to that right side breakout. And we've seen it this year already. We've seen Chara, you know, he's played well, don't get me wrong, but Chara has struggled without McAvoy on a full-time basis because, you know, a lot of that comes back to Carlo and Miller and, you know, who's the perfect fit, if you will.
Well, in terms of just where the Bruins sit right now and the reason, you know, that topic comes up, how are they? And even I think Cassidy at some point a couple weeks ago was asked, you know, are they ahead of where you expected this team? And he admitted they were, which is refreshing to hear from a coach in a way. He's got some funny things he said even after last night's game we can get into. But the Bruins are 40-15-8. They're already, in the last 3 years, they won 44, 42, and 41. They're going to blow past that number. They've got 19 games left. Even if they go 10-9 the rest of the way, they're going to be a 50-win team. I think they were on pace for like 108 points or something on some of the projections. They're third in the NHL right now in terms of total points. They're still within striking distance of Tampa, sort of.
Six points back. The games played is helping them.
Yep. Three games in hand. So this is a block. I mean, this is a very good team by the numbers. Second best goal differential in the NHL. 10 double-digit goal scorers, although I guess not one that's really shaking the top 30. You know, Bergeron still leads them with 27 goals. So what happened? What is the big difference that has propelled this team from where they were expected to be a bubble team to right now where you said they, even without McAvoy, they can sort of coast in right now?
Well, I think one of the big things that we'll always come back to is the chances that they are taking right now. I think they're high-risk chances. They're legit scoring opportunities. I think last year we saw the little, you know, you throw it on net and you hope for the best. I mean, no, that doesn't always work. And I think you're seeing the success of that. But last night, I think, was a great example of where that can get them into trouble. You saw them last night. They were deferring a little bit too much, trying to get the absolute best chance possible. Sometimes you want to just throw it on net. But I think for the most part, they've been able to find the exact sort of scoring areas of the ice where they'll be at their best. I think they have every line is unique in the sense that I look at that second line, for example, that new one with DeBrusque, Krejci, and Rick Nash. They can score from all over the ice. I mean, that's really a remarkable line. DeBrusque is good in front of the net, so is Nash, but both players have great shots. David Krejci has been shooting a little bit more this year. You really can't discount what he can do when he's motivated and effective like he has been this past week. So I think that really changes everything for them. You know, they don't give up a lot of chances, but at the other end, they generate an absolute ton.
Those things you're talking about there point to, obviously, the GM for putting it together, Sweeney, but keep him out of it just for a second, to Cassidy in terms of the system change. I don't know. It was weird to hear in the offseason the players talk about the coaching change. Maybe they just still defer to Claude Julien and they don't want to, you know, trample on the grave. But nobody really gushed about Cassidy, did they, on this team? They all were kind of like, hey, he came in, he changed a few things. Wasn't that big a deal. It was just sort of a reset button. It was a motivator. You know, we needed a kick in the ass, that sort of thing. There was no like, oh, God, Cassidy is the greatest coach in the NHL.
Yeah, I think it's funny that you're seeing a little bit of it trickle out. I think that there was a quote earlier this year by a player who said that the D2D pass was a dinosaur age move. You know, and that was sort of what Claude was. He was the D2D breakouts. That's how they
would
generate.
Who said that? One of the defensemen?
Yeah, one of the defensemen said these were, you know, Bruce calls these dinosaur age breakouts, which is such a slap in the face to Claude. But it's true, you know, and now you look at the way that they break the puck out of their defensive end and they get going up the other way. I mean, that is where this league is trending. It is go, go, go. And I think he's coached that into this team. Everyone brings up the practices that Cassidy has, these high tempo, upbeat practices. I mean, those definitely help. But I do think there's a sense of, you know, there's a looseness around this team. I think the young kids have helped that. I think the players who have been here for 12 years, 10 years, I think they're excited now to get to the rink again.
That was the biggest thing you got, was some of the veterans saying the young guys played looser.
Yeah.
That Cassidy's impact on the younger players was the most obvious thing, the tangible thing you could point to. That and, I guess, you know, managing egos, because he's got to bench a lot of guys. He's been benching McQuaid here of late. I think he's done a pretty good job of that. But I can't say Cassidy in and of himself has been, like, the biggest reason they've jumped from last year to this.
Well, he still has some stubbornness. I mean, we've seen that. He's taken DeBrusque and Heinen out of the rotation at times. Not necessarily that they deserved it, but just to go with some heavier, older players. I mean, he has some Claude in him. It's not like he's the complete opposite and he throws the kids out there for 60 minutes and he says, hey, do whatever you want. But I do think
But he benches them for a game and they're back in there, right?
Exactly.
Like Heinen's out for a game and he's back.
But here's the thing, too, about that, is when he does bench a player, that player never gets in his own head. I found that when you talk to these players, there's a clear line of communication there from the coach to the player. And I don't know if that was always there. I don't know if the players, you know, Ryan Spooner, for example, I don't know if he took that, you know, he would take it personally when he was benched and he would never quite be the same, I think, when he stepped back in the lineup. And, you know, a lot of that comes back to the player's personality, I know. But I think they've done a great job here of sitting some of these young kids, these 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds, And even the 30-year-olds like McQuaid and saying, listen, this is what we're doing right now. It doesn't mean you're not going to be back in, but this is why we're doing this. So there's no gray area for these players. It's very black and white. They know what's expected out of them, and they know what they need to do to stay in the lineup when they return.
Sunday Skate presented by Star Market here on Sports Radio WEI. Ken Laird and Ty Anderson, our Bruins beat writer for WEI.com. Give us your biggest reason the Bruins are now third in the NHL in points. Quite an unexpected season. 19 games left. 617-779-7937 to jump aboard. The 2-1 win. The sweep of the Canadiens. First time since, 94 or something like that?
Yeah, I was three.
You were 3 years old?
Remember it.
Good. A part of that is Montreal is just terrible, terrible.
They are an awful team.
I don't even think it's Claude's fault. They're just, the blue line is bereft. Obviously, Weber's out, and, they've had some...
It's one of those things, the roster is...
Aging
the complete,
roster for a couple years, I guess.
It's the complete opposite of a Claude team, that roster. They don't have any good centers. Their wingers are all relatively small and not that skilled. I think that their defense is just garbage without Weber. And I think even with Weber, it's not that great of a defense. I mean, they're so reliant on Carey Price to carry them. And, you know, when he's not net, I mean, Niemi did a great job last night. But that team is hopeless. They allowed 21 shots in the power play.
I know. That's why I have a tough time buying your incredible resolve. That's a game you should win.
I wrote, the Canadians are garbage. Don't go crazy about this win. But I think that if you throw 43 shots on net and you had, I think it was 23 missed shots in the second period.
It's terrible.
It's almost like that's a game that they lose under Claude. Under Claude, they lose that game. You know, they would get a goal when it was 2-0 with a minute left and be like, oh, yeah, you tried. You make the box score look like you actually gave a damn. But I do think that, you know, this, you gotta give them some credit there for not thrown in the towel and finding ways to generate legit scoring chances with 2 minutes left.
Well, there's a feather in Cassidy's cap, I guess, too, talking about changing when he needs to. In the third, he basically benched Jake DeBrusque. He said as much, or he sat him for a couple minutes anyway. And yet, in the postgame, he's worried about how DeBrusque's going to handle it. He praised him for coming back and having the jump that he wanted, and he gets the game-tying goal there in the power play late. So he does seem to have a good knack for pushing the right buttons and yet not alienating young guys to the point where they're just a shattered mess afterwards.
Yeah, and I would say that DeBrusque is really a coach's dream. I mean, he is one of these players that he gets it. He knows what he needs to do. He knows how he needs to return to the lineup. I mean, you talk to him, he his dad played, obviously, so he's kind of been around this. He knows, you know, how it goes. And, you know, he's one of these guys that I think is they're going to be happy they didn't trade him. Because I said this last night, I think he's going to score some big goals for them. He has a knack for this sort of third period, teams down by a goal, whatever the case may be. He really seems to step up there. So
there were some reports that he was the ask from the Rangers for McDonough, right?
Yeah, he was.
They were going to get Ryan McDonough. He had to be in the trade.
He was. I mean, it was going to be, you know, we said this last week, it would be double what you paid for Nash. And sure enough, you look at what Tampa Bay, the price that they paid, seems to check out.
The other candidates, I guess, for who would get the most credit for the Bruins and where they are this year, a month ago, Patrice Bergeron was probably at the peak of Hart Trophy talk in his career. I'm not sure he'll ever win the Hart or even finish top three. He's just never going to be a big points guy in terms of the league leaders, I don't think. You know, you ever see him being a top 10 point guy or a top 10? Maybe.
This was the best you were going to get,
this was his
I think.
Shot. He was on pace for 40 goals there for a while. And they miss him. There's no doubt about that, and he is their best all-around player. So I guess that's a different argument as far as, you know, who's their best player, what's the biggest reason from the jump from last year to this year. Without him, they can put Nash up there, and they can sort of get by for a short stretch without Bergeron. Riley Nash, that is.
Yeah, I would say so.
Poor man's Bergeron.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I like it better than putting Backes there because I don't think that would necessarily fit what they want to do with Marchand and Pastrnak. I do think that at this point now, that line is so talented on the wings that you can survive without Bergeron, like you've said, for this quick little stretch here. And I wrote this last week. I'm okay with Bergeron sitting these next 3 weeks. I really am. I think that to go anywhere in the postseason, you need Bergeron to be at 100% or closest to it. I don't need him playing through a broken foot right now when you have a 20-point lead for a playoff spot. I just don't need it. And you're playing every other day.
Why did he play Sunday? That's the other question. I'm not saying it's like...
Yeah, well, I don't think that they necessarily knew. Because it seems like it's a small fracture.
Well, right. They didn't find out until Monday, right? They took the CT scan, but he came to the rink in a boot.
Yeah. Well, they're also in a weird spot there because they had Nash play, and I think they were... because they moved Spooner that day. They didn't have an extra body because I don't think Gionta was in the building.
Wasn't ready yet.
Yeah, I don't think he was in the building and ready yet, even though he lives in Rochester. So they kind of had to put him out there. But we know Bergeron at the same time. He's gonna he's going to play until his official diagnosis. And listen, I'm happy it came on Monday because I don't want him, you know, put him in bubble wrap, rest of the season, both he and Chara. You need these guys.
That's what I'm saying. As a coach, that's where Cassidy's got to be like, forget it, you're sitting. You know, it's a back-to-back game. He said we, what, took a shot off his ankle on a clearing pass. I still haven't seen that video. Did you go back and watch that? I didn't see it. I had to find it.
I thought that he got hit by a Pasternak shot. I thought that's what did it, but then they said it was a block shot from a clearing attempt or something.
I
have to go back and find it, but I did see him kind of limping after taking a shot off the foot, but I couldn't tell you who shot it going back on it. I want to say it was friendly fire, but again, got to go back in there.
Well, I mean, the other candidates obviously would be, you know, Marchand and Chara, as you mentioned already. Marchand with the game winner last night, which is, as Cassidy called it, an all-world play, and he is an all-world player. It's just tough to say. Maybe it's the suspension still that sticks out as, like, this guy's still on edge sometimes. It's hard to say he's the reason that they are where they are right now. They have other parts that would just rise a notch above it, different from last year.
The PHWA, they have us do a mid-season awards now. I actually gave Marchand a Hart Trophy vote.
You did?
Because I really think that unbiased. It was a fifth place vote. It's not a big deal. I think that he has this knack for scoring these big goals as well, similar to DeBrusque, where you know you can trust him in any situation. You know, and I think that you look at sort of what he's done, his production without Bergeron this year. I think he's had some time without Bergeron.
That's true. He can sort of carry them a little bit when he's out of the lineup.
Yeah, he's still been great. So I think that he's legit. I mean, that line as a whole, I just think that you're at the point now where the players are not reliant on the other one being there as much as they used to be, which is great news for the Bruins because this is a team that, you know, they've been ravaged by injuries over the past this season and I think last postseason. So finding ways to have guys score and produce without other players there, without their line mates there, I mean, that's another reason why this team has been so dangerous. You can't bank on this team falling into a hole when one of these guys goes down, which is remarkable given those guys, you know, and their talents.
The power play has been, I guess, the one thing. They had the big night against Pittsburgh, but otherwise that's been wonky here of late. Might just be getting Rick Nash and some other guys into roles and getting things adjusted. They did finally score last night, but that's been a concern. If there's one other concern here the last couple weeks, that's been it.
Yeah, and I think that's a bit of a cycle. You know, you're going to see them go cold for a while and they'll get hot again. I think the big thing now is teams know what they like to do in the power play. Now you have to sort of change what you're doing and be aware of that while getting guys like Gionta and Nash into your power play structure, see what they can do. I'm not big on David Backes being on your first unit. I just, it's not something I'm crazy about. I get it right now because I don't have a ton of other options.
I mean, I guess they kind of missed Spooner there. He was, I don't want to say he was like a power play specialist, but he was a pretty good fit there for that unit.
Yeah, especially along that wall there. I mean, because he would feed it to Bergeron, you know, in the bumper spot there for those one-timers. You haven't seen that because obviously Bergeron's been out. But they can probably put Heinen there and they'll be okay. Heinen has played there when Spooner was injured, and that was a pretty good thing. But now Heinen has cracked the lineup as well. I mean, you look at his game last night, I didn't see a ton from him that I thought, I was like, okay, this player needs to be back in there on Tuesday. I mean, and this is not the worst thing in the world. You have that competition there. You have Wingles probably comes back in on Tuesday.
The Wingles competition.
It's great, right? I mean, listen, I didn't think Brian Gionta would have 3 points in two games here. I mean, this is kind of, everyone that you need to produce is doing it, and this is not a bad situation, but you'd like to see this competition sort of have some set winners between now and April 9th.
Well, we'll talk about the guys they added here at the trade deadline and look back on the last week coming up here on Sunday Skate. But a couple of folks want to weigh in. We'll get to the lines here. We only have an hour. Got to bang it early. Let's go to Blair in Maine to start us off here on Sunday Skate. Ken Laird and Ty Anderson. What's up, Blair?
Hey, what's going on? Hey, right behind Tampa Bay is, we're right behind Tampa Bay, actually, is the Boston Bruins right now. So we're really in good position of the playoffs, I would think, right?
6 points behind Tampa, Blair. 6 points. That's
6 points. Yeah. So
with a tough schedule,
not bad at all. It's totally not bad. It's not bad compared to other teams like Anaheim, and you know, you can name a couple other teams that are in other divisions. You know, like the Anaheim Ducks. And
glad we went to Blair quick. I don't know. It's like the hopes of catching Tampa. You brought this up last night at the rink, Ty. If they really have hopes to make a deep run, you could make the case they have to pass Tampa. They've got to be able to let the Lightning and Toronto sort of bang each other up in round one and get the easier seed. But it's hard to even say that with any in the NHL, the playoffs are so random, it's hard to sit here and pound the table. They've got to get the one seed just because so many number one seeds have failed. I mean, the best Bruins team under Claude went out quick, right? That was the, well, the second round, I guess, to the Canadians or whatever.
Well, they had a great team in 2012 that lost in the first round team to the Capitals. Yeah, which I think if they win that series, they probably go back to the Cup. So a little bit of frustration there on my end, looking back on it. But no, it's a real thing. I think that you can't discount how hard this road is for them. I think you're looking at a road that likely has the Leafs, the Lightning, and then if you're lucky enough, the Penguins or the Flyers, one of these teams in round three. That's a hard road. You know, I think especially that first round one and two, we talk about the Atlantic being a joke, but you got the teams at the top there are three pretty damn good teams, I would say. So I would love to see, we talked about this last night, I would love to see the Bruins get that number one seed and draw one of these, whether it's Jersey or Columbus or the Islanders. Give me one of those teams in round one, because I think you can handle that in five games, six games maybe.
But that's where losing Marchand and Bergeron McAvoy and Bergeron almost... to expect them to now catch Tampa missing those two guys, that's going to catch up with them in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, it all depends. I mean, you know, if Hudobin can provide these kind of games like he had last night, you know, I think you're a little bit more comfortable with your whole situation, because you know you can't put Rask out there every day. You don't have to. And that's the other thing, too. So it's one of those situations where their schedule down the stretch, it's a little brutal in terms of its travel, but the teams aren't necessarily scary. I think that you have three head-to-heads with the Lightning still left. If you win those games, it really changes the whole dynamic. You're not going to win all three, I would assume. But if you can capture two out of three of those, I mean, now you're talking. You know, now this could be a real thing for them. So
they're still like 2 weeks away from their first game with Tampa in that stretch. It's amazing. This week they have one team of interest, really, Philly.
Yes.
Thursday. And then they have the home and home of Chicago.
Garbage team.
Carolina, Florida, and then finally Tampa. So, they kind of do have a bunch of trash.
That's why it's like, take your time. McAvoy, that's great. Take your time. I'm okay putting Nick Holden out there for 21 minutes right now.
Yeah, but they lose to trash. They've lost to the Sabres, what, three times this year?
Yeah, but the Sabres beat the Lightning the other day, too. It's one of these things where, you know, I don't buy into the whole, like, Sabres, that was a bad matchup for them. I'm not going to lie. For whatever reason, that's a bad team for them. But these other teams, they've handled them all pretty well this year. I think they smoked Philly earlier this year as well. I mean, even their one team that you would say this is a great team, they destroyed them back in, I think it was December.
And they did just sweep Montreal, which is, we've established, is a garbage team. So
yes,
they've taken care of business there. No doubt about it. All right, well, coming up, we'll look back on the week. Speaking of Rask, we're going to throw him into the pot as well, because it didn't take long. You had an 8-4 win, and people were still squawking about the goaltending a little bit.
Don't want to
over-exaggerate it, but it's been a continuing theme of the season. So how does that play out? And we'll look back on the guys that they did acquire here at the trade deadline. Gianta, Holden finally got into the lineup and has made some contributions. I'm not sure I'm still sold, but the coach praised him last night for some under-the-radar skills. And, of course, Rick Nash, Ken Laird, and Ty Anderson. This is Sunday Skate presented by Star Market. We continue here on Sports Radio.
Go Sports. You're listening to Sunday Skate with Ken Laird from the Kirk and Callahan Show and WEEI.com Bruins writer Ty Anderson. Sunday Skate is brought to you by Star Market on Sports Radio WEEI.
Marchand holds the puck, comes off the boards against Drouin, turns the net, has a shot, and scores! 10 times in his career, Marchand has plunged the dagger into an opponent's heart in overtime. The Bruins come from behind to win in sudden death, 2-1.
Jack Edwards on the call, the Bruins' third win in a row. The night started off bizarre for me, Ty. I came into the rink about 4:45 or so. It's an odd start time.
Yes, 5 very o'clock. Bizarre. Hated it.
So I'm coming into TD Garden, and who's behind me but Jack Edwards from Nesson? And I'm thinking, boy, this is a little odd. The game starts in 15 minutes. I could be coming to puck drop, but not Jack. He's got one of his handlers with him, and he's shouting, out of the way, face it, Nesson, coming through. Jack thought it was a 7 o'clock start. He's blowing past the guy at the metal detector who tried to, like, tackle him, basically, because he wouldn't put his bag, you know. He was just...
He
needed to get through, yeah. I don't know if they addressed that on the telecast or not.
What would they have done? Would they have put Dale up there?
They're coasting. You said it yourself. They're like 20 points ahead of the playoff line.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Just let Brick call the game.
Yeah.
Would have been awesome.
I think Dale was in the building, though. You could have theoretically.
Dale was definitely in the building.
You would have had to move him up to 9.
Ooh.
Could you have done that?
We got the agent on the phone, like, with 10 minutes. Yeah,
is that in his contract?
I don't know.
Can he do that?
Great question. You should ask him that on Zero Pucks Given this week.
We will.
Which people were missed big time this week. The first week off. Is this a sign that the podcast is taking a step back?
Of course not.
This was Kirk's prediction. You guys would go like 4 or 5 episodes strong, and then Dale would tap out.
Yeah, he has a lot of predictions. No, it's just our schedules this week could not line up. And then obviously with the departure of one Michael Hawley, the schedules became even tighter. So
Dale was in mourning. He didn't want to.
I don't think it was that. No, he didn't have a candlelight vigil and listen, these weeks where he's on Nesson and we got deadline days and we got all this other stuff, you know, it's he's got a lot more going on than I do, I guess.
So. Sticks are hot, sticks are alive. They're scoring goals.
That was maybe the first episode. Or was that last year? It might have been last year. Anyway,
I don't know. It was when I was not as good.
It's great tie hockey talk. Sunday Skate presented by Star Market, Laird and Anderson. We were talking about why the Bruins are where they are right now. Third in the NHL in points. It is pretty unexpected. And all that being said, they're still going to be, including by people like me, not given much of a chance to take a deep run in the postseason. I don't see them getting past Tampa. You and I talked about Toronto last week. That matchup hasn't been good for them. I think that would be a great series. It looks like they're really destined to play the Leafs in round one, unless Tampa just has, for some reason, hits a lull here. But the Bruins, despite the games in hand, now missing Bergeron, now missing McAvoy, we'll see how long. It's going to be a tall task for them to go on like a 15-4 streak and try to catch Tampa here over the last couple weeks of the year.
Yeah, and I'm of the belief that I wouldn't mind a little bit of a slide here where I think you've seen the makings of it, the early makings of it, but you know, a little adversity never hurt these guys, I don't think, and I think they would be better off for it. You don't want to see them lose seven games in a row, but I do think that you get some challenges here. You're forced to tinker with what you have, see with some different lines, see with different combinations. I think it's better than if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, for example, and just rolling into the postseason as an absolute wagon.
You don't like that peaking at the right time sort of thing?
No.
Overrated?
I don't like that. But
that is a worry about Bergeron to me. If the foot keeps him out like a month and he comes back with a week to go, I mean, he's been through injuries before. He's a veteran. I guess he'll get his game back fairly quickly, but will it still bother him in the playoffs? Is he not quite the same? Is he not having the best season of his career?
The way he plays, he's going to get hurt again at some point. It's just about managing it right now. I think that your whole thing, you're worried about the Leafs. I'm not worried about the Leafs in a seven-game series. If the Bruins have home ice, because they can put that Chara-Bergeron combo against the Matthews line. We saw it in their first game. The only game that Matthews played this year against the Bruins, it was in Boston. We saw Bergeron and Chara just completely crush him. He was a non-factor all game. So then you look down to that second and third line. That's where you got to find the matchups that work for you. The Riley Nash line against Nazem Kadri, does that favor the Bruins? It all depends on the game and where the venue is. But I think that that's a team they can handle. I really do. And the Lightning as well.
I don't know how much credit to give to Chara in general, talking about why they are where they are. He's clearly playing well. Part of it, I think, is McAvoy and the McAvoy factor. There's no doubt, though, he shut down guys like Matthews and McDavid and Goudreau, and you go through the list this year. That line has been great. The only thing people point to is now, like, the TB12 diet that he's on. Have you done a story on that, or have you bought into this whole thing?
It's all plant-based.
He's eating it sweet green, and that's the difference?
Yeah. Well, I think he's always taken his training seriously, but I think now he's taken the idea of extending his career seriously. I think that was always the thing. He's in great shape, but he plays 3,000 minutes a year, and you can't rely on him being good in April. I think now they've found the healthy balance there where he has a lot of rest and recovery, and his dietary, his diet has changed to help that. So I think that has played a huge factor in this more than anything else. But at the same time, I just think that, you know, he is what he is. But now if they have this deep defense where they can put him out and they can reel him in on nights where they're winning 5-2 in the third period, that's perfect. You know, I think that when they brought in Holden, and when you have 8D on your team basically, and you're scratching two guys at night, I think that they did that with Chara in mind. They want to keep him fresh. They know that the schedule is going to be crazy. There are going to be nights where Chara plays, I think, 17, 18 minutes, mainly PK, especially as the later we get in the season against some of these crap teams they're playing.
What do you think of Holden after seeing him for a couple games? He had the assist on the Brust game tire last night, and Cassidy's can be convincing. He was talking about what the hidden knack that he's got for getting shots through from the point, basically. Because you can tell he's not like, he doesn't have the Jerome Iginla slap shot. He doesn't have that big bomb from the point. But he's obviously a tall guy. He's got the reach. So he can be effective on the back end. But as far as you buy that, he's got this special ability to get shots through.
Well, you look at last year, 11 goals, 35 points, I believe it was. And he has some offensive pop. I don't want to use it. You know, I want to go to him and say, okay, this is the offensive defenseman that they need. I like him better on the left side than I do the right side. I think that's where the Rangers made a mistake with him last year, was putting him on this past year, putting him on the right side. When I saw him on the left, I thought he was pretty good. Right side, I thought he had some shifts where he was a little bit he was wandering a little bit too much for my liking. But listen, if he's a third pairing guy on this team, I think they're going to be okay. I really do. I think
like if it's Holden and Carlo, like it was Thursday, that's not the worst thing in the world.
I don't hate it. You know, I think that Holden's playing well enough where you really can't take him out right now. I think that he's giving you something you need. He fits what Cassie wants to do. I think finding forward streaking with that slap pass. I mean, that's pretty. It's been pretty effective so far, we have to say. So
was Grizzly benched for that game, or they said he had an injury?
He has a nagging injury right now. They're just kind of taking their time. No need to rush him. And listen, I think when you're talking about Grizzly, he's been great. He's a great skater, but he is 5'9", 5'8". You know, the physicality will take a toll on him at some point. So getting him out, getting him a little bit of a refresher here, not the worst thing in the world either, just given the way that he plays and his size.
So basically, they're going to rotate all these guys for the next 19 games.
Yes. Yeah, that's the way it's been explained to me, is that don't read too much into some of these scratchings, because it's about preservation, really.
I guess I can buy into that. I wanted to play this Don Cherry cut. This was a couple weeks ago. He was asked about, basically, does he buy into the Bruins, and why does he think they're having such a successful year? Of course, he brings it back to himself, which is not that hard to believe, but maybe some truth to it. Here's what Cherry had to say about the Bruins and why they're having the resurgence season.
Everybody says the same thing in Canada and everything. How the heck are they doing it? There's nobody in the top 30 scoring, and Bergeron, I think, will get the MVP. I'm going for him for the MVP. I mean, he's going to get 30 goals. He plays the power play, kills the penalty. So this team is almost the same as our team. We never won one award, not one. We were the second best team after Montreal. We never won one award or never made the All-Star, and this team is sort of the same way. Except for Marshawn.
Yeah, and I guess he's giving Bergeron the most credit there. They won't win an award. I mean, Bergeron probably would win the Selke again.
He'll lose it this year to Couturier.
Oh, you think he will?
Yeah,
because he got hurt. Or
Couturier is getting so much love nationally. He's gonna get the get all the votes, I think.
Well, if that's the case, I guess McAvoy had a chance to win the Calder, and that would be your only trophy.
So Barzal's putting up 5 assists a night.
Right. So that's probably out.
Yeah. The Jennings, they get that. Raskin, Hudobin. So that's that. There's one they could get, right?
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's fewest goals against.
Fewest goals against is the Jennings trophy?
Yeah. That's one that Tim Thomas and Manny Fernandez won one year.
Oh, who could forget?
Anyone forget? I think that was a real thing. I mean, yeah, they could do that. But no, you're right.
Bergeron may have gotten some votes for the heart, but it would have been pretty deep down the list. And as good as McAvoy has been, and I think he has been in Chara, those guys won't get any Norris attention, will they? No,
the award has changed. The award has changed so much so that now it is the Offensive Defenseman Award. I think whether you like it or not, I mean, I have my opinions on it. I think it should be a little bit of a mix of both, but I can't see Chara getting serious.
Or somebody, right?
Yeah, I can't see him getting serious love for it. I think that time has since passed.
Or P.K. Subban.
Yeah,
Which would be another thumb in the nose of Claude Julien and the Canadians who were just in town.
There's a lot of nominees, I think. I mean, you just named two right there. I mean, I'm very partial to Victor Hedman. I think he plays a great game. He goes against top guys, and he's an offensive producer. So,
and he's playing. I was actually looking at he plays like 26 minutes a night. As good as McAvoy and Chara's up to 22 or 23, maybe.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
No, it is, and I mean that's the big piece of their team. You know, I think that we all look at Kucherov and Stamkos, rightfully so, but what they can do in their back end, especially with McDonough, that's the big challenge. When we talk about the Lightning and the Bruins, I need to see how the Bruins handle that defense, because that defense, you know, they can be pretty damn good.
All right, 617-779-7937. What's the biggest reason the Bruins are top three in the NHL right now? We have to get Freddie in New Hampshire and contractually obligated to do so. What's up, Freddie?
Good morning, guys.
How are you?
Just like Ty said, four lines and competition.
But that's not one guy, Freddie. You got to pick somebody.
You don't take days off. Oh, it's a team. This is a team. Look, you just said there's ten scorers. They're not even close to the top in the top, what, 20 in scoring? But there's 10 guys. How do you play against that? That's what it's all about. It's 2011 all over again.
Okay, but what's the biggest difference from last year, Fred? What changed?
The new kids are in there, and they get competition.
McAvoy.
You don't take days off of that. McAvoy, he's one of them, yes. But I'd like to make a couple of observations about this week. Okay,
good.
Why is it every single year the Bruins play crappy teams like the Sabres? Okay, they didn't have Kane, they didn't have Eichel, and they didn't have Eichel, and they weren't even in that game. Every year it happens. 2 years ago, I mean, last year was the Avs, and before that it was the Hurricanes. It always seems to happen. And then Chara this week. Okay, he finishes a penalty. He plays the whole 2 minutes. A guy challenges him. Everybody else would be going to take a nap. He just destroys the guy. I mean, this guy is a beast.
See, make a pick, Freddie. Chara's the biggest reason. A better Chara this year.
They need to re-sign him for at least 2 years, and then so they can retire his number, because he's got to go out of Bruins. Now, Pasta, he's got to start bearing down. There's no way I should have been drinking Nervous Tonic in the third period of that game last night, because there should have been two or three goals up by then.
Well, even Cassidy admitted that after the game, right? So he could have had a hat trick easily.
Yeah, definitely. He's one of these guys, man, where he's just wildly entertaining to watch. I think last night he attempted 10 shots. Only, I think, 4 or 5 of them landed on net.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's one of those things, you want the puck on his stick because he's such a talented goal scorer, but he really needs to bury a few of these, I think, especially when Bergeron's out. I agree with Freddie in that sense that, you know, now he's one of these top-paid guys on this team. I think he's expected to go against top competition and have the results that he had last year. And, you know, I don't want to say that he's underperforming, because I don't think that's necessarily the case, but you could use a few more goals out of him, a few more chances here, you know, and maybe it's just a matter of luck. Maybe he's going to go on a tear here as a 5 goals in 3 games. You never know.
Well, you know, according to Freddie, it's a team. Obviously, if that's what you and Fred and others are going to stick to, and I'm not going to pick somebody that stands out above the rest, then it becomes a Don Sweeney Award. It's all on the GM that he was able to put this group together and have a top-to-bottom good team. I want to talk a little bit about the last year with him, though, because he didn't really – the offseason was maybe the quietest in the last 10 years, right?
Paul Postman didn't get the needle? Didn't move the needle for you?
I mean, he did for me, but probably I can't speak for the rest of Bruins Nation. But we'll talk a little bit about Sweeney. Set the week. Sunday skate coming up top of the hour. Villani and Bradford for 4 big hours, 9-1. Rob Bradford down in Fort Myers. He wrote like a 10,000-word piece on Red Sox advanced scouting changing with analytics. Did you read this last night?
I got through half of it, and I actually have the webpage open on my laptop. I got to finish it when I get home.
I mean, it was a combination of awesome and like Gary Tangway name drops. There were probably 20 people in there nobody's ever heard of.
Have you ever been to Fenway with Bradford?
Of course.
Like, he knows everybody.
Of course.
It's wild to me. I was walking through with him once, and he knew like the ushers and like just people that I was like, who's that? He's like, oh, that's so-and-so's cousin's nephew, and you know their hair, and I'm like, oh, cool, I guess. I don't know.
I picture him up till 4 a.m. last night writing this analytics manifesto. It was something to see. But anyway, those guys are coming up. We'll get a little more hockey talk in, though. The Bruins, a winner 2-1 in overtime last night. It's Laird and Anderson. This is Sunday Skate presented by Star Market.
You're listening to Sunday Skate with Ken Laird from the Kirk and Callahan Show and WEEI.com Bruins writer Ty Anderson. Sunday Skate is brought to you by Star Market on Sports Radio WEEI.
I think Torrey had 10 shots on net, and coming from our defenseman, I mean, that's huge. And, you know, I like to go to the front of the net. So, like you said, it's more just the focus of getting there. And obviously, it was perfect timing. It was a great pass by him. I knew it was coming. And it was just a matter of just getting a stick on. And I think it's just a matter of when those are tight games like that, teams are, you know, collapsing. It's, you got to find a way, and I was happy.
Jake DeBrusque with a lot of kids in the background. It was like kids' night.
It was
after the game. How about the Laird kerosene prediction? Second intermission, DeBrusque at 1942.
Almost on the money. I mean, you're what, 2 minutes? Well,
two off? Minutes off.
I'll still take it. And the game of predictions, and a wild game of predictions with a team that scores all these goals we've talked about.
I know,
you got to take it.
I feel good about that. Now, you were just rattling off some stats here during the intermission. That line, the success of the DeBrusque line here the last couple games.
It's been phenomenal, especially with Rick Nash added to it. They've been together for 34 minutes at 5-on-5. They have generated 27 scoring chances for and surrendered just 8 scoring chances. They only have 2 goals to show for it so far. They're outscoring teams 2-0 at 5-on-5. But that line has been absolutely phenomenal. That is your first line right now. Without Patrice Bergeron on the shelf, that Krejci, DeBrusque, Nash line is your first line. And they've just, I mean, we're at the point when I watch Rick Nash, I think he's going to score every shift. Every time he has the puck in his stick, I'm like, he's going to score a goal.
He's much better than I thought he would be. Much better. And the second goal against Pittsburgh, where Krejci was driving to the net. It wasn't even that great of a pass by Nash, but just the fact that it looks like Krejci's rejuvenated too.
Absolutely. I think that he has trust now with Nash. He knows what Nash can do. I think he trusts him a bit more than Spooner. I think Spooner was, you know, you were happy to see Spooner have success there, but you didn't trust it. You didn't fully believe in it. And you know, I was saying that, you know, they should believe in this. They should believe in this. But now that I see Nash, I'm like, I can't believe I thought that Ryan Spooner was going to be a top six winger on this team. I can't believe I once thought that. But I think with Nash, I think this may be similar to the whole Kessel situation in Pittsburgh, where he's not the guy here. You know, he's a guy on a pretty damn good top six. And I think that alleviates some of the pressure. He is making $7.8 million, but New York's eating half of it, so it's not as bad as it would be. And I do think that it's just been a good fit for him mentally.
Now, what do you take? Minahan had the counter argument earlier in the week. He does not like the Nash trade. He just thinks it's way too much for a rental, where if you don't win a round, even if you do, it's going to be viewed in history as not worth it. You gave up a first round pick. You were, in theory, we talked about it last week because the trade broke like 5 minutes after we got off the air. Yeah. But even you admitted Ryan Lindgren was a prospect you didn't want to see go.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to pick, you know, the guys that were all mentioned, you know, who was going to be going, he was one that I was kind of hopeful that they would hang on to. Just because I'm not a big guy. I'm not sold on Zboril. I'm not sold on Jeremy Lauzon as well. I need to see more of these players in training camps and what have you. But, you know, and I did like Lindgren's game because I think he's a player that, you know, he can have some use for you. But he's still 3 years away, we would say. We would probably say he's 2 to 3 years away. So, you know, is that going to help 43-year-old Chara then? Probably not. You know, so I think this is a move. I like this move because this is capitalizing on the pillars of your team having career years. And
maybe they can't resign him. I don't know. If he likes it enough that in the offseason he'll take some kind of a reasonable deal to stay.
Yeah. It's,
if you found a fit for him.
It's tough because you have so many kids coming up here. You know, Donato's going to be entering the mix here. Frederick will be entering the mix. And JFK's down in Providence. I mean, you got guys here that you think should be stepping up here, and so you may be a little reluctant to sign Nash to a big deal. But if you can do a 2-year deal where he's making $4.5 to $6 million, I think you have to consider it, because at least if they continue to produce like this, because this fit is really something that the Bruins have not had on Krejci's wing since, I would say, the days of Lucic and Iginla.
I mean, Sweeney looks good. He was getting panned in the offseason for doing nothing, right? I mean, you said Paul Postma. Did they do anything else?
Kenny Agostino, remember him?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Maybe, for like 4 minutes.
But I guess you praise him for the fact that he just believed in his team. We're going to go with the young guys. It's worked. And then when they showed him it's working beyond even expectations, they went out and they traded a first-round pick for the first time since he's been at GM, and they got Nash in here. So
yeah, he resisted some free agent deals that didn't make a lot of sense for them. Like Trevor Daley, they were in on, but they weren't going to go 3 years. I think they were in on Oduya for a little bit as well. But again, they didn't want to go multiple years on these players, and you're seeing why. I think you're seeing those players struggle, and you're seeing sort of the complete picture here in Boston, is that he wanted to have that flexibility long term, where now we're talking about re-signing Rick Nash while also saying, hey, well, you know, they may have to bring in these kids. I think the future has remained the future, you know, if you will. It's not, you're not compromising anything by bringing in Rick Nash right now, which is the, you know, that's the best thing you can ask for, really.
All right, Ty, good work. Ty, we'll be back with Dale and we think a Zero Pucks Given podcast this week.
Yeah, tomorrow.
All right, be on the lookout for that. I'll believe it when I see it. But
what is going on here?
You guys missed a week.
But 1 week? We've been pretty consistent.
It was trade deadline week and zero, nothing.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the whole thing. Zero Pucks Given.
All right, that's we think coming up tomorrow. And coming up next, Villani and Bradfoe. Bradfoe standing by from Fort Myers, ready to talk analytics in depth with the manifesto that he dropped last night. And Villani's ready to go as well. I'm Ken Laird. This is Sunday Skate. We're presented by Star Market every Sunday, 8 o'clock, through the Bruins Run. And that's Ty Anderson. It continues on here on Sports Radio WE. The attorney.